I will call the meeting to order, even though we obviously don't have a quorum. And Representative Nornes, I'll have you present your bill, even though we will not be able to move it or amend it, perhaps until after you are gone.
Well, but I trust you will do it.
Yeah, but welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. We'll wait with the amendment, too, then? Is that what you
Right. We can't take any action until we get a quorum. And we have had some members check in, so we're closer to a quorum than it looks.
All right. They're sort of invisible this morning.
Right. They're just here in more than one place.
Yeah. All very happy and supportive, I hope.
I hope.
Madam Chair, this is essentially the same bill that we talked about last session. And it's a result of a fatality involving one of my constituents. The community of Pelican Rapids hit two buses that had made a trip to Chicago for a band festival or a band event of some sort. On the return home, one of the buses left the highway at Albertville, rolled over, and one child was dead. Several injured, but there was one fatality in that accident. The Wisher family talked to me sometime later and are under the strong belief that if there had been seatbelts available, Jessica would have been wearing one. And that's where this comes from. So as a result of their wishes to do something positive, we brought this forward. What the bill does, again, I have to point out that it's not school buses we're talking about here. We're talking about the bigger motor coaches. We consider motor coaches to be strong and safe and luxurious. They are luxurious, but in a crash, they're not safe, not like a school bus. So, again, the reason to hopefully have seatbelts. The windows pop out, things fall apart. And so that's where this is coming from. The bill, as amended, will delay the seatbelt requirement till 2012. And it only applies to new motor coaches. Retrofitting old motor coaches is not an option. It's not a good option. They have to be built into the coach when it's manufactured. That's according to information from the motor coach companies and also from the State Patrol and others. So we're fine with that. It does not involve transporting students to and from school. It's strictly, again, cross-country, long trips where students need to be protected. It also does not affect school districts cannot own a motor coach of this type. So it doesn't. So I don't know what else you need to know other than we would very much like to move this forward. The family would very much like to move it forward. Jessica was 16 years old. She had just received her driver's license. She had just started a new job. And then tragedy. So I would have both of her parents here, except that they operate a barbershop and a beauty salon. It would be very difficult for them to make the trip without having to cancel a lot of appointments. So I'm here. Now, State Patrol is here. There's others that maybe would like to testify if you so desire or if you have questions. But basically, Madam Chair, that's my story.
Thank you, Representative Nornes. And we now do have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order and move House File 331 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and I'll move the A2 amendment. Representative Nornes did explain that this clarifies that it's for coaches manufactured after 2012 and makes the same corrections that we, or same changes that we made to the bill last year. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. As amended to the bill, anyone wish to testify? And Representative Nornes, you're indicating that the State Patrol supports the bill.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Welcome, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name's Michael Moran. I represent the Minnesota Charter Bus Operators Association. We're a group of about 47 independent operators throughout the state of Minnesota who have just a bit of a difficulty with the bill. We absolutely are not opposed to seat belts in any way, shape, or manner. What we are opposed to is Minnesota coming up with a regulation that may or may not meet the federal standards. The nature of motor coach operation is school transportation is probably a small percentage of what these vehicles do. A bigger majority of the time they are crossing state lines, out of state with other groups of seniors or tourists or so forth. Our fear is that if Minnesota comes up with a standard that does not meet the federal standards when they come down, we're going to be very limited with this vehicle. We're going to be limited to driving just in the state of Minnesota. Currently, NHTSA is undergoing crash testing and development of a standard. I believe it is with the is currently their recommendations are currently with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. It's that body's responsibility to come up with safety standards. I'll be brief and just urge this committee to be mindful that there are federal standards coming down, and I would really hate to handicap our member operators with having a standard that doesn't meet federal standards.
And Mr. Moran, we took your advice last year and waited on the bill. And could you tell us if there's any progress that's been made from last year to this year on the federal standards?
To myself, I can't speak that there's any direct progress. However, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration Secretary has made it a priority this year. Unfortunately, your guess is as good as mine as to when they can move.
Any questions from members? Representative Benson.
Well, I'm just, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just a little curious. This bill, Representative, deals with adding seat belts, does it not, to new vehicles?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'd just like to ask the testifier, isn't federal standards usually a minimum? Is there a requirement that states not to go beyond the minimum? Why would you be restricted to only the state of Minnesota simply because there were seat belts in the vehicle?
Mr. Moran.
It doesn't, our concern doesn't pertain to putting seat belts in vehicles at all. It pertains to being able to meet that minimum standard of safety. And if we go whichever standard you look at, the European standard or whatever is coming out here, if Minnesota's regulation goes below their minimum safety requirement, we may be stuck with a vehicle that we can only utilize within Minnesota and not be able to cross state lines with it.
Well, Representative Benson.
In situations like that, I don't know, maybe you could inform us, aren't vehicles that were manufactured before a new standard comes in grandfathered usually?
Usually that's the case.
Well, Madam Chair, simply because there's a seatbelt on it, that would not impinge the manufacturer to meeting federal standards if they continue to build coaches, would they?
Mr. Moran.
That, I can't speak to that. That would probably be up to an attorney to decide. But speaking from a business, strictly from myself in a business state, I would have a difficult time sending a vehicle with a lower standard over the road when there's a when the nation comes up with a higher standard.
Representative Benson?
I'm sorry for the continued question, but if the representative's amendment were not made law and these seatbelts were not added, would not any coach manufactured before federal standards were changed then be obsolete? And would you, in that logic, simply not to put any of them on the road? Wouldn't they all be put in some parking lot somewhere or sent out to the Southwest with all those airplanes that no longer are adequate for the Air Force? I don't understand how you can suggest that simply adding a seatbelt somehow makes the vehicle inoperative now. It would be inoperative, wouldn't it, with your logic, if there were no seatbelts added?
And I think this will end this right now with Mr. Morin giving one more statement, and then we'll go to the closing statement from the author. Mr. Morin.
Yep. Thank you. I don't suggest, sir, that anything is going to become obsolete here, whether it has seatbelts in it or not. What I'm suggesting is that I don't want to have to purchase a vehicle with Minnesota standards or whatever standard Minnesota comes up with for seat belts or lap belts or three-point harness, and then have a federal standard comes out and we can't meet that standard or we're below that standard. So now when I cross a state line into another state with this vehicle, I'm actually below the safety standards. So like I say, sir, I'm not anywhere opposed to putting seat belts on motor coaches. I think it's an awesome idea, but the feds are working on it, and let's see where their standards go.
Closing statement, Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the members, I'm not aware that we're actually setting a standard. We're only adding seat belts to motor coaches used only to transport students. We're not requiring that to be on all motor coaches, and I think that's where this bill actually would draw the line. I guess I'm under the impression that this is the direction the federal government is going. The seat belts will be a part of their standards. I think we're just moving ahead a little faster than they are, that's all.
Yeah, thank you. And Representative Nornes, for members who came in late, the amendment does say vehicles manufactured after 2012, so we kind of wonder if the federal government would be even slower than that. So, House File, I'll renew my motion, House File 331, be laid over as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Nornes. Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And Representative Anzels, if you would like to move your bill.
Yes, I would ask that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion.
And actually, the Representative Anzels moves that House File 3008 be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance. So, Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is another bill dealing with school buses. This time it deals with type 3 school bus drivers, which are drivers of minivans, vans, and SUVs. This bill was first heard and passed out of transportation policy. It was supported by the State Patrol, and there was a little bit of questioning, but no opposition. And then it was referred to government operations because of an exemption dealing with for rulemaking, and now it's here. And the sum and substance of the bill is that it lines up pre-employment qualifications to drive a Type 3 bus with the physical qualifications necessary to drive the big buses. It comes here from the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association, and Mr. Kelleher is here to answer any questions of a technical detail that you might have.
Questions from the members. Representative Depke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anzels, last year we had a law regarding the Type 3 drivers that Representative Ward carried. It was passed in the House by a nice margin, and it brought relief to some of the coaches and people like that that are driving smaller vehicles for groups of kids. And I just wanted to know if this particular bill is going to undo that legislation. Last year, one or two of my schools saved several thousand dollars, and they were very grateful for this bill. I don't know whether you remember, but they were really anxious to get it in the last session. Could you respond to that question?
Madam Chair, I don't recall that particular piece of legislation, but I'm sure Mr. Kelleher does.
Mr. Kelleher.
Madam Chair.
And since you're starting, could you introduce yourself for the
team? Yes, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here representing the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. And to my knowledge, I think you could compare this bill to last year's bill as sort of a cleanup sort of situation where it doesn't go contrary to the issues in last year's bill. As Representative Ansels has stated, it's just trying to conform the Type 3 vehicle laws with the Big Yellow School Bus laws so that they're equal and operators have the similar same sort of drivers having the same qualifications driving both types of vehicles. So I'd say it's complementary to Representative Ward's bill from last year. And I should just admit that I was not involved in last year's bill. That's the way it was described to me.
Representative Epke.
Would you mind if we have Representative Ward just make a comment to that, please?
Representative Ward.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Epke, I take Mr. Keller for his word from the standpoint that your industry has said that this is not contradictory to the last year's legislation, which did give relief to the Type 3 buses and drivers. You know, requiring that they all be certified and licensed and things as such. So this is not contradictory to that legislation at all. So I, Representative Epke, I feel comfortable with the fact that that they agree that it's not contradictory.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ford.
Any other questions? I have one. Mr. Kelleher or Representative Ansels, since this is just plugging in the smaller vehicles to the big vehicles rulemaking, does this statute, which exempts it from rulemaking, just puts it into law? Will they have the force and effect of law because we're doing it in law, or are they guidelines?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding that we're directing the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety to expedite the rule. Right. So they're exempt from regular rulemaking procedures. So it has the same effect as law. I mean, as you may recall, state constitution, state law, administrative law or administrative rule. This is the sort of hierarchy that I was taught when I first came here, Madam Chair.
Very good, because guidelines don't, and these would be real rules. That's what I wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
So, any testimony? Hearing none then, Representative Ansels renews his motion that House File 3008 be recommended to pass and returned to the Finance Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and
the
bill is passed on to Finance. Thank you, Representative Ansels. Mr. Kelleher. Representative Erdahl. Welcome to the committee, and do you have a mover of your bill, or should I move it? I will move then that House File 3347 be recommended to pass and return to Finance. Welcome, Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, great to be here today. I have a bill that actually saves a little bit of money for our school districts. Last session, we changed how fees are charged for schools. This meant that all school concession stands were charged a separate fee. For example, in Eden Valley, where I have a small school district, has two concession stands, one on each end of the football field. And under this, our new law, each concession stand was having to pay $150. And all this does, excuse me, this rescinds requirements for licensure of school concession stands by defining the school concession stand as a food and beverage service establishment located in a school on school grounds or within a school-owned athletic complex that is operated in conjunction with school-sponsored events. Therefore, a school site would pay one fee, not multiple fees. And it's a cost to the Department of Health of about $35,000, which they have graciously suggested that they would absorb.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Any questions from the members? Testimony. Representative Erdahl told me this would be a 5-minute bill. I think it's a 2-minute bill. I'll renew my motion that House File 3347 be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the bill is passed to Finance.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Abler.
That's good.
Welcome to the committee, and Representative Newton, would you like to move the bill?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the Abler bill.
Representative Newton moves House File 2728 be laid over for possible inclusion. I'm into passing bills here today.
Thank you.
Representative Abler, welcome.
Well, and I appreciate the enthusiasm of the committee and being favorable to really good ideas. So this is just no exception to what you've already approved earlier in terms of how great the idea is. It's a novel idea. There's a lot of the districts in my county are below the average, either metro or state. Elk River District is even below our revenue stream, which is interesting. And they're also a high growth district. And that presents a lot of challenges with buildings and so on. And rather than me joining on very long, I'll turn it over to my witness who will tell you the details, and then we can respect the committee's time. Superintendent Bezek is here.
Very good. Thank you. Welcome, Superintendent Bezek. If you could identify yourself for the tape.
Dr. Mark Bezek, Superintendent of Schools of Elk River Area. I'd like to thank you, Madam Greiling, and the members of the K-12 Education Finance Committee for offering me this opportunity to speak on behalf of District 728 and House File 2728. It's additional aid for debt service equalization for school districts that have experienced explosive growth. With me today, I've got my Director of Business Services, Finance, and Demographics, so if there's any questions afterwards, you can surely ask them. I'd also like to thank Representatives Abler, Pepin, and Kiffmeyer for supporting this bill. My mission here this morning is fourfold. It's to tell our story, justify the critical need, explain the effect of funding inequities on our district, and propose a solution. Really, in a nutshell, what's happening is our taxpayers are paying their fair share and more in taxes, but their hard-earned money is going more to debt service relief on our basically our mortgage than into the classrooms. In this economy, we find it very hard to go back to our taxpayers again and ask for more money. We see a more viable option coming here and ask for relief. You should have a brochure right here that talks about the legislation. I'm going to walk you through it very, very quickly here. If you turn to page one, we are now the eighth largest district in the state. We are growing rapidly. We're a little under 13,000 students. If you look at page two, again, I'm going to go through this very rapidly. Page two, we do have a very organized legislative action team, a grassroots group of community members. Page three, you'll find that our legislative agenda and our financial priorities fall right in line with AMSD, MASA, MSBA, Parents United, and Education Minnesota. Looking at page four, that's actually the legislation that we're looking at. When you look at the body of the general education revenue, you'll see a bunch of different categories there: extended time revenue, gifted and talented, basic skills revenue, training and experience, secondary sparsity, elementary sparsity, transportation. You know, the list goes on, and we're looking at adding one more. It seems that in the past, when any district or group of districts have had significant problems, you've helped them out. And we have one right now, and it's explosive or rapid growth. And if you look at the bottom there, what we're proposing is a $500 per student addition to the general ed funding for the four qualifying areas here. Districts that have had 4% or greater increase in student enrollment, increase in the student enrollment over 2,900 students, 50% of its local tax effort is going to debt service, and over 40% of the ANTC. If you look at page five, this upper graph on page five really shows the problem that we're having. That's a growth chart. We put in over 2,900 students into our school system in a period of about 7 years. We've been growing about 300 to 500 kids a year. 1 year we grew 700 students, and actually in 2 years we grew over 1,000. That's the crux of our problem right now. On the bottom graph there, it shows our debt service. In 2001 we had a house payment of $4 million. Right now, this year, it's $22 million. Now, the funding for this, or the payment of this was amortized, backloaded for two reasons, or actually one main reason, to spread out the pain as the growth came. Well, you know what happened in the last few years. the growth didn't come, it stopped. And we were basically a poster child for this whole mortgage debacle. If you take a look on page 6, this really, the upper graph there, this is any school district. You know, the system we have right now is unsustainable. And if you look at, you know, our general ed revenue on the bottom there, you can see where it's grown from 01 to 08, 09. You see what's happening to our special education revenue. And you've also seen, our expenditures, and also our health insurance. And that's happening to all districts, but we're getting hit very hard here. And if you look at the bottom graph, we struggle to maintain a very minimum fund balance. We run about $130 million budget, and we roughly have anywhere, depending on the year, maybe $3 to $5 million in a fund balance, you know, to help us out with our issues. If you look at page 7, here's what's happening. Our classrooms are overcrowded. We've got very few programs for kids. When you look at the metro average, we're significantly higher than the metro average with classroom size. For us to lower our classrooms by 2 students would cost us about $4 million across the district, and that's how large we are. If you look at page 8, this tells more of the story. When you look at the money our people are paying in taxes, you know, they're paying their fair share, but 55% of their local tax dollar is going into our buildings for our debt service. The state average is 31% in districts our size. Then when you look at the net tax capacity of our district, we're pushing up around 48% usage of that, where the state average is about 35%, which makes it very hard for me to go back to our taxpayers and say, we need more money. So in essence, we're making the house payment, but we're not putting food on the table for the kids. If you look at page 9, as I mentioned before, our area up there has been the poster child for this whole mortgage debacle. And you can see the housing starts in 2003 versus the foreclosures. Those lines don't meet anywhere good where they're at right now. Now, these houses are starting to turn around. We're still growing. We grew by about 100 students last year. We'll grow by about 150 this year. We're expecting when this boom comes back in 3 to 5 years, we will be growing that 300 to 500 kids again. So this is going to happen again down the road here. If you look at page 10, this is really about equity. And we're kind of caught in the perfect storm here in Elk River between three things. The excess levy, we have about $700 per student in place, which we have to renew 200 of it this fall, and I don't want to take bets on if that's going to pass or not. Plus, we're on the short end of the general education funding, and now with this debt service compared to districts our size, schools our size around the metro area. So in excess levy alone, $700, the state average is $1,200. Now you go around the outside of the metro, and some of those districts have $1,800, so kids are walking in with about $1,000 per head, about $13 million a year more in these districts than we're receiving. You look at general education revenue, the state average is roughly around $8,600. We're about $7,500, $7,600. There's another $1,000 per head, another $13 million that we don't have. Then you look at the debt service, because most of their buildings are paid off and we're building, you know, there's another $6.5 million. So districts around the metro are receiving up to $32 million a year or more, $33 million a year more than we have to operate our schools. And that's not equity. You know, we need help. The effect of this, you know, if you put the brochures away and you just look at what's happening with kids, we offer a very bare-bones curriculum. We have 6 pre a day. We have no activities for kids in middle school. We have no language, foreign languages in the elementary or middle schools. Extremely bare-bones, high class sizes. It's really evident when you start looking at the top-end kids, the National Merit Scholars, the ones that are the 0.5% in the nation. Statistically, we should have about 4 a year. We turn out maybe 1 every other year. When you look around the outer regions of the metro area, schools half our size are cranking out 10, 15, 20 of them a year. It's not because they have smarter kids or better teachers. It's because they have the programming, which we don't have. And that's the whole funding issue here. So really, you know, our request is here, you know, to have you support House File 278 for that additional $500 per student, which is still below the state average in that category. With this funding, we will be able to hold off our inevitable funding crisis that is coming up. We know you've got your challenges, with the state budget, and we recognize and appreciate that you need to make tough decisions. Please help us by ensuring the funding system is equitable so that our children have the same opportunities. So, again, in closing, I'm asking that you consider this bill for the Elk River Schools.
Thank you, Dr. Bezik. We have a couple questions. Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess early in the morning I have more questions than usual. But Representative Marquardt isn't here, but I introduced a number of bills that had very small fiscal impacts and received a note that we're just not hearing any of those. So I'm just curious, without, you know, commenting on the merits of this particular bill, and you have, you know, a very convincing argument, I'm just wondering, how is this all working, if you could just explain to me? Because this is a major fiscal impact, I would think.
Thank you, Representative Benson. I think that's a good question for all of us here. And we've been saying that this year, because we don't have funding, we're not hearing bills that cost money. We decided that at the beginning of the year. And then later, due to lots of agitating from lots of members, we decided to hear bills that did cost money, that were new ideas that we hadn't heard year after year after year, which this is a new idea. And then the author had to advocate. And Representative Abler is very good at that, and so charming. So we have we have this bill before us. The financial situation has not changed. And so we want to hear new ideas, and that's what this bill is doing here before us. Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So my problem is I haven't any new ideas.
Representative Benson, I wouldn't say you don't, but perhaps your district has been asking.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Benson, maybe you don't have any new ideas, but Representative Chair Grelin also mentioned the word charming, too, so I don't know where that fits into the equation as well. But anyhow, Dr. Bezik, this committee always looks to try to hold education harmless, all the members on this committee, to do what we can for funding. And this is absolutely an interesting concept. But I have a few questions I just wanted to ask regarding that ran through my mind. How many of your buildings, what's your new building rate? Or tell me your building, new building growth in the last decade or whatever. How many of these buildings are new buildings that you're paying your debt service on?
Basically, in the last 8 years, we've added two high school, actually a high school and a half, middle school, and I believe two elementaries. Page five of your brochure.
And then Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as I count here, Dr. Bezik, I just want to be clear, it's 4 new buildings, 4 renovated buildings, and 2 land purchases. Is that correct?
Correct.
Dr. Bezik. Correct.
And as I'm, as thank you, Madam Chair, Dr. Bezik, you know, we out in greater Minnesota, we have a tough time passing any kind of a successful bonding levy or operating levy. So which leads me to my next question, and Madam Chair has been pushing, and members of this committee have been pushing for just a little bill called House File 2, the new Minnesota miracle, that we think would be excellent for equitable funding throughout the state of Minnesota. And so does this, one of my concerns would be, would this create again a discrepancy between those districts that have huge growth like Elk River versus districts that are declining growth like Crosby? Can you just address that a little bit, please?
Well, Dr. Bezik.
Personally, I would, when you look at our area and you look at the number of kids that have come in, you know, I couldn't imagine what would happen if the voters weren't willing to pass these referendums. Now, I've been in districts, my whole career has been outstate, and I've been in districts that are reducing in size. But, you know, as a leader in those districts, you have to manage either your growth or your decline properly. And, again, I have a lot of personal feelings about when districts are in decline and they want to try and hold on to every program that, you know, they possibly can. So I'm not a good spokesman for outstate because I've been there, I've seen it, and I've seen where our money goes in education. You know, in a situation like this here, we... you know, these buildings are almost all at capacity again. And that's the situation we're in. We have a mortgage of about $180 million that was created by a five-year window of really explosive growth. You know, right now we're not growing the way we were, but we're still growing. But we're looking back at trying to solve a solution, solve a problem that put us in this situation. If the economy and everything had kept on going, we probably wouldn't be missing a beat. We'd probably be chugging right along. But now all of a sudden everything's flat and the expenses are going up. And again, our people are paying, you know, good taxes. It's just that it's not going to the right place. And there's probably a handful of districts like us in the state with this growth, but no one has put in the highest this percentage of kids, you know, in buildings. So, that's a long way around. I don't know if I answered your question, but I've been in outstate. I've seen what's going on there, and I've got some very strong opinions about that. But I'll leave that go.
Hey, before I call on any other members, let me ask to judge time here because we're ending this hearing at 9:15. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify? Okay, well then, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just two things. One quick thing is in the literature that passed out, I think there was a mistake. On page 13, there's some photos of legislators, and Representative Abler, it looks like they have a photo of your son in here.
Yeah, I couldn't make it for the picture that day, and so he came.
So, I'm just kidding. Madam Chair, and this maybe is a question for Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom, is I'm assuming why the school district is not qualifying for debt service equalization is that their adjusted net tax capacity on a per-pupil basis is just not the right number. And maybe this might be a good time just to briefly explain to members, not the debt service equalization formula, because that would take up the rest of our meeting, but rather just what the definition of adjusted net tax capacity is. If I don't mean to drop
Mr.
that
Strong.
On you, but just for members to understand what that meaning of that value is.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, our debt equalization aid program provides additional assistance to those school districts that have relatively low tax bases. The equalized factors have not been adjusted over the last 10 years, so the overall amount of aid under the program is now at about $8 million per year. In general, a school district that qualifies for debt equalization will have two things. They'll have very low tax base per pupil and very high building debt per pupil. In terms of the tax base composition, what goes into the adjusted net tax capacity is the market value of the district with the legislatively assigned class rates. So business property has a class rate of 2%, homes have a property of 1%, agricultural property about 0.45% for most of it. So that's the definition of the tax base that's used. And essentially the first 15% of tax base under the debt equalization program, the debt levy of that amount is local. And then amounts over that are equalized at $3,200 per pupil. And then once you get to a 25% tax rate, the amount over that is equalized at $8,000 per pupil.
And thank you, Representative Garofalo. And of course, the point that Representative Ward made is 100% accurate. This the problem of Elk River, as well as the problem of all districts, would be addressed in the new Minnesota Miracle. You know, as we have not enough funding, and debt service equalization is a big part of the new Minnesota Miracle. We have various districts for various reasons, and this is an extreme circumstance where districts can pass large levies, low property wealth, and then they have all this building, and we've let the debt service equalization formula atrophy down to virtually nothing, then we get this sort of a situation. And so it's come to a head in Elk River. It's coming to a head in a lot more districts. We really need the new Minnesota Miracle because the lack of funding, this is a, you know, would be a modest bill in good times, but now when we have such a problem with revenue, not just caused by the economic times, a good third of our problem is of our own doing here in Minnesota, where we refuse to raise taxes when we cut them disproportionately way back in the late 90s and 2000s, and I am always proud that I did not vote for that bill. Representative Van Zels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, as is usually the case, our chair made my point.
And, make it again, Representative.
And I won't say it again. No need to. I'm wondering, in your district, what is the split? split between state dollars into the district and local dollars off the property tax, you know, the ratio between state dollars and local dollars. And I really don't care in what category the local dollars are being applied to. And secondly, this is a really nice brochure, and I'm wondering if how it was paid for.
Dr. Beasing.
I don't want to get snooty about it, but I think the committee should know.
Dr. Beasing.
Any information we have for making our case is district-funded through our communications budget. We have a budget set every year.
And then you had a first question, though?
Yeah, and then...
Dr. Beasing.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'd turn back to page 8, unless Joe wants to come down here. Joe is our testing assessment and research person here, and he has this information. Why don't you pull a chair.
And welcome, and please identify yourself for the tape.
I'm Joe Stangler, Director of Research and Assessment for the Elk River Area School District. In response to your question, using fiscal 08 information, the information provided from the Minnesota Department of Education, 84% is the ratio of state money to local money for our Fund 1 operations.
Okay. Thank you very much. And the last question, Representative Dabney.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent Beasing, sorry. Representative Ward talked about the efforts of this committee to hold education harmless, and I always get concerned when people talk about that because I fear that it overstates the fact that the governor unilaterally cut schools 17% this year in his unallotment, and that I fear that people in this building and outside always hear we've held education harmless, when in fact I consider a 17% cut in anybody's budget to be a significant hit. 16. That was compounded by the governor's choice to raid the kids' piggy bank in order to make the checkbook balance, and I know that was a $600 million borrow from the school districts across the state, $58 million in mine. What was the impact of that in Elk River?
Dr. Beasing.
They didn't want our money.
They didn't want you. Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney, it sounds like they...
Superintendent, you...
We were unfortunate we didn't meet the threshold.
All right.
Taking ours.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Abler, closing comment.
Well, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the efforts of this committee. I miss serving on it. I understand the challenges you face. I thought it'd be productive to hear another view, another challenge. Every witness group has challenges, and so may you decide well how to best govern. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abler. And to Representative Benson's question, I always have methods to my madness, as people that know me well know. And another method to my madness is reinforced by looking at the state legislators in the area, and we have many more converts to be made in that list on page 13 for the new Minnesota Miracle, and perhaps this will help. So it's really appreciate your pointing out this problem. Schools and your students need this funding, and you need the new Minnesota Miracle. And Dr. Beasing, I think I'll let you have a closing comment.
We only made enough for this committee.
Very good. And I'm sure Representative Van Zels, there's only enough of these made for this committee, you'll be happy to know. He's coming back, and he gets the final word. Representative Van Zels.
It is a snazzy brochure, and I'm honored that you provided me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. House file, Representative Newton renews his motion that House file 2728 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And the next bill is Representative Newton, who can move his own bill.
Madam Chair, just a point of information.
Representative Benson.
I would strongly suggest that since there are so few of these, that we save them and make sure that our fellow legislators on this page get these copies for their own use.
Representative Benson, I'm going to give you mine to pass out on the House floor.
Thank you.
And you see another reason for having a new bill. Usually we just are hearing the same old bills, and this one perked us up, didn't it? So thank you. Representative New.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to have House File 3503 laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Newton moves that House File 3503 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Newton.
Madam Chair, I also have two amendments to the House file. I'd like to first offer the 3503 A1 amendment.
Representative Newton moves the A1 amendment. Please explain the amendment, Representative Newton.
This amendment, Madam Chair, simply adds intermediate school districts to the mix for the levy authority.
Any questions on this amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Newton.
Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce the 3503 A2 amendment, which was presented to me by Representative Dabney.
Representative Newton moves the A2 amendment, and Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Newton. Thank you. The A2 amendment does two things. It includes in the bill the authority for Minneapolis to levy for increased contributions to the PERA pension fund if the current proposal in the pension bill to merge the MRF fund into PERA goes forward. And secondly, it clarifies that House File 3503, the increased levy authority applies only to those levy increases in this year's pension bill.
Any discussion on the A2 amendment? Any questions? Representative Garofalo.
First of all, Madam Chair, I'm noticing that the amendment does not meet the 24-hour deadline, and I'm wondering if Representative Dabney would have preferred to have offered this amendment before he took a whack at the governor in this committee on on the K-12 shift. But I think we'll let the timing of it, we'll let that go by. But I know, Representative Dabney, you and I did talk yesterday about what would happen if this fund did not get funded, if it wasn't solvent. Are we going to have a discussion on that today, or is that going to be for a future time?
Thank you, Representative Garofalo, for being another charming member of the committee, and Representative Dabney.
Representative Benson isn't here to collude with about never being called charming in this committee by the chair. Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I think the discussion of the MRF-PERA merger is probably best left to another day. I will say MRF is, because of state actions over the years, currently scheduled to run out of money in about 8 years. And it's particularly should be noticed to people that this is one of those funds where the folks were not coordinated with Social Security. So this is what they live on. They do not have, like TRA members, do not have Social Security supplementing their pension benefits.
And Representative Dabney, like Hennepin County for the stadium, this would only be Minneapolis levying for.
Yeah. Madam Chair, that's correct.
Yeah. Any other questions on the amendment? Representative Benson.
Madam Chair, I just heard my name used in vain. I just was wondering what the context was.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, again, the chair is calling other members of the committee charming and not you or I.
All right, with that, the A2 amendment, are we ready to vote? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Newton, your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. As you recall, we had House File 2952 that was brought to us regarding the Teacher Retirement Association, and one of the it was laid over for inclusion. Possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And this bill requires school districts to pay a certain percentage to help offset the deficit in the funding for the TRA. What this bill does is permit school districts to levy for the funds to pay for their requirement in the TRA.
And
I have
Ms.
Kelleher.
Welcome, Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members. Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Members, it's a pleasure to be up here today sharing Representative Newton's bill. This really is a band-aid schools districts presently need. We have our pension funds at a critical time where their foundations are being eaten away. In fact, TRA by 2032 is shown to go bankrupt. This is a pension fund that has all our teachers in it. School boards have always struggled when it came to pensions. They're really set by the pension committee here in the House and the Senate. And cities and counties have the ability to levy for those additional costs. School districts, on the other hand, since they became back to local schools, since about 78, have been allowed to have state aid payments that offset the employer increase in pension formula. Well, this year is really a new year, and that additional state aid does not look like a viable alternative. And it would make sense to treat all local governments the same way going forward so we could provide this benefit to our members. And I want to let the committee know it's not just the teachers' fund, it's also PERA, which has the same type of deficit. These are where our custodians and our food service members are part of this union, and they are also asking for an employer increase. Without this levy, we're looking at making choices that impact the classroom. And that's very tough for your school board members around the state to do. So this levy, though significant, really would, A, help put those pension funds back on a stabilized course, and, two, keep that money, keep present dollars heading for kids. So we appreciate your consideration, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any other testimony? Mr. Cape.
Good morning. I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I just want to speak very briefly in support of this bill. We feel that the pension systems in the state need to be stabilized. The sooner that gets done and gets started, the better off we'll all be. Otherwise, we're going to have this as a repeating problem for a long time. We would like some help in coming up with a way for the districts to fund these increased payments. And it would be very helpful if we had levy authority to do it. So that's my very brief testimony. Ms. Patrick challenged me to testify for under 1 minute, and I think I pulled that off. I'll stand for any questions if you happen to have them.
Thank you, Dr. Kite. Very excellent. And no questions, so Representative Newton renews his motion that House File 35. Oh, Representative Depke does have a question. Representative Depke.
Sorry, I was waiting. I didn't know when I was supposed to do it. I guess I'm not very charming either.
So, Representative,
I'm in good.
You are charming.
Though.
It's Representative Benson and Representative Dabney that are have
problems.
Okay.
Thank you. As I was reviewing this last night, I have a few questions, and one of the ones, because I know that as we're going to be talking about local units of government are going to be requesting to levy. Is this particular levy equalized?
Representative Newton.
I don't know. No.
And Representative Depke, I'm afraid that because of the lack of a target and any funding in this committee, we are up against it, and I think you're going to find that the next three bills are very much against the philosophy of the New Minnesota Miracle, because the philosophy of the New Minnesota Miracle is that we wean ourselves away from local property taxes and we have state funding for our mm-hmm. students, which is fair to students wherever they live. And if we do have levies, then they absolutely must be equalized, because otherwise we're even unfairer to those who have property wealth like you and I do in our districts, and those that don't, like Representative Newton. But nonetheless, we are in such terrible times with so few options that Representative Newton is willing to come forward with the bill when he doesn't have the luxury of a lot of property wealth in Anoka-Hennepin, and that is a big problem, but it's because we can't add any revenue to our budget that we are in these desperate situations.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that explanation. I do understand that the levies, if you levy, it's a different thing, and I'm looking forward to the next bills that we're going to be looking at. But I know that I had asked that question in another committee about levy, and it was equalized. So I just was assuming that this would be equalized too, but I wasn't sure. So that's where my question came from. And apparently Representative Newton doesn't have that, know that
and,
question.
And Representative Depke, or in order for us to equalize mm-hmm. anything, we have to have some money.
Yes.
It costs money to equalize.
I understand. I might not be very charming, but I do have a brain, so I do understand. Thank you very much, though, for your explanation. May I ask another question?
Yes, you may.
Okay. Would this levy authority be subject to voter approval, or would it be that it would be made by the local unit of government, otherwise, in other words, the school board?
Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Representative Depke. This would not be up for voter approval. If, in fact, we don't get this specialized authority, school districts, if they don't want to cut classrooms, are going to have to either find it some other way or go to their voters and say, we'd like you to support teacher pensions. They're going to bottom out going forward. We're not going to have them available to meet the promises districts have made to their teachers. And out of all these choices, we thought this levy option, though not equalized, was the solution to this massive problem we have in front of us.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments. One is I do want to thank the stakeholders once again for coming forward to try to solve the pension underfunding issue. The best asset we have in the best solution we have available for us is the power of compound interest. And by stepping up, getting in front of this and starting it sooner rather than later, it is greatly appreciated that they're doing this. But also I want to say to members that this is a preview of coming attractions. As difficult and as uncomfortable as these decisions are, they pale in comparison to what's going to be coming in fiscal 12 and fiscal 13, where, as the chair has mentioned, all the solutions are bad. There is no easy answer. I just want to reinforce to members of the committee that if this committee is going to be giving more authority to school districts to have the discretion to raise revenue, we should also be giving them the discretion to decrease their expenditures. And we should be removed. If we're going to be doing this, if we're going to be moving towards a local control direction, then it should be on both sides of the ledger in a balanced approach. And Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Newton, does this legislation apply just to the proposed fix we're talking about for TRA this session, or is it for any future increases that may come down the road as well?
Representative?
I would say it would be for anything that comes down the road. If as Representative Garofalo says, if we're going to be facing these problems increasingly, then this should be continuous.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, I just want the committee to again understand that in a unequalized scenario on the property tax situation, for this or any other purpose, I want the committee to keep in mind that literally half of northern Minnesota is owned by government, thereby exempt from property taxes. Secondly, our two leading industries, wood products and mining, in mining's case, no property taxes are assessed. And in forestry's instance, very, very little of forestry land is taxed for school property tax purposes. And on top of it, this legislature has exempted seasonal recreational mansions on those beautiful northern Minnesota lakes from the school property tax levy. So this is not doable in any scenario without a measure of equalization.
Thank you very much. And I don't see any other questions, so closing statement from Representative Newton.
Just to thank you for letting me present the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Ms. Kelleher. And House File 3503 will be laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Newton, to your next bill.
Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 3063 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Newton moves House File 3063 for possible inclusion. Representative Newton.
Madam Chair and members, this bill permits school districts to renew an existing operating referendum without having to go to the voters. In my district, I served on the school board for 8 years, and I think one of the most time-consuming things that we did was to prepare for a levy and to prepare for what would happen if the levy should fail. It took up an unbelievable amount of time of not only the superintendent but the entire staff, teachers in the schools, and what we're asking for essentially is that the levies could be renewed for the same term that they were initially for. If it's a five-year levy, it would be renewed for 5 years, and that the amount would not be increased. As Representative Garofalo so wisely said, there's a need for us to give school districts more control and give them the same sort of authority that some of our cities and counties have.
Very good. And members, we are ending promptly at 10. We have this bill with six people signed up, and then we have a bill that I have with four people signed up. So I'm going to ask everyone to be brief. Dr. Carlson.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Denny Carlson, superintendent of the Noak Hennepin School District. I want to begin by thanking Representative Newton for his years of public service for the Noak Hennepin School District. He's helped us on many, many issues, and his support is greatly appreciated. House File 3063 is supported by the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Schools for Equity in Education, Minnesota Rural Education Association, and the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. This bill is critical to our future as an excellent school district in Minnesota. We are the biggest district in Minnesota, and we want to stay among the best. Here's the reality we face. In our current year, we cut $16 million and 160 teachers. Next year, we cut $8 million and 50 teachers, and that includes a staff pay freeze. In the best case scenario, as you look in the next biennium, assuming a 0% and 0% with no further cuts, Madam Chair, fiscal year 12, we'll cut $15 million, or about 200 teachers. Fiscal year 13, we'll cut $15 million and another 200 teachers. And that'll be a cut of 600 of our 2,800 teachers in 4 years. We have raised class size beyond what parents and staff believe are good for their students, much like Elk River. We will close eight school buildings at the end of this school year. As a result, we are changing attendance area boundaries for 2,200 students and moving 500 teachers to different schools for next year. We have made many, many people angry with our decisions. In the Anoka area, we have high unemployment and the highest number of foreclosures in the metro area. The economic realities of our communities are harsh. We have 13 communities. In this environment, we will go before our voters in November of 2011 to ask for a levy renewal of $48 million. Not a very good time to go before the public on a vote on anything. If that levy fails, we will cut another 600 teachers. This will be a total cut of over $100 million in 5 years, which is 25% of our current general fund budget. No other governmental body has to go before its citizens for a vote to run basic operations. School districts are the only ones who are set up to take this hit, not cities, not counties, and not the state. To Representative Newton's point, levy election costs us about $100,000 in cold cash, a much more of an impact in terms of our staff and community. This is not a stable nor an adequate method to fund education in the state of Minnesota, and it needs to be corrected. We cannot wait for the new Minnesota miracle to be funded. This bill is a step in the right direction. We'd appreciate not only your consideration, but also your full support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Levitt, is he here? And why doesn't Lori Swanson come up as well? Mm-hmm. We can swing another chair around there for her. welcome, and please give us your testimony. And if you have something to say that's already been said, don't repeat it, because we don't have time for repeats. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mike Lovett, Superintendent, White Bear Lake. Nearly 40 years ago, Minnesota gained national recognition for significantly restructuring funding for elementary and secondary schools, called the Minnesota Miracle by some in the national media. In 1971, the Minnesota legislature undertook significant restructuring of our tax system, and the state assumed greater role in funding schools. But more importantly, the legislative action was a response to decades of increasing awareness of troubling inequities in school funding and resulting variations in educational quality. 17 years before, in 1966, Harvard educator James Coleman had observed that the history of American education since the Industrial Revolution reflects the tension between each of us wanting the best for our own child or own children, and all of us wanting the best for all children in our society. Over the past 40 years, this tension has played out in Minnesota between three competing values. The first is quality education for all students. This value is firmly rooted in the Minnesota constitutional mandate that the stability of a Republican form of government, depending mainly upon the intelligence of the people, it shall be the duty of the legislature to establish a general and uniform system of public schools. The second value is a tradition in Minnesota of local control. This tradition has resulted in relatively more local discretion in Minnesota than in many states. But this value rests only on tradition and codified law and not on a constitutional mandate. In Minnesota, we've given local school boards the control to propose, but voters the control to decide. A third value is tax equity, an elusive but important concept. Over the past 20 years, we've struggled to balance these values. However, during the last decade, we've seen mounting evidence that however well-intended these laws and this balance has been, economic circumstances have thrown the system out of balance, with potentially devastating effects to the stability of public education. As we enter this new decade, school districts see a full one-third of our revenue at risk. Our state resorts to accounting shifts to delay revenue into an equally foreboding next biennium. We rely on temporary federal government stimulus funds as Minnesota struggles to match revenue and expenditures. The net effect is that we see one-third of our revenue at risk. But here is the additional critical point for today. For the more than 90 Minnesota school districts that rely on local referendums for up to 20% of their revenue, the prospect of facing another referendum levy is daunting. Adding to the potential loss of up to one-third of our state revenue, for districts such as ours and Anoka, a full one-half of our revenue is at risk. Current law requiring local referenda, as opposed to giving this authority to elected school boards, has no compelling constitutional basis. Current law places this generation of students at risk. We believe it is time to consider giving locally elected school boards more discretionary authority to assure quality education for all students. And this bill is an important first step.
Thank you very much, Ms. Swanson. Mr. Wilcoxon. Oh, you're here. Are you here to testify or to just answer questions?
Madam Chair, all three of us
but he's the next
this morning
one.
We're prepared to.
Okay, and so you're going to have to squeeze the two of you into 3 minutes, so we won't get to the third one if we hear three minutes out of
Madam Chair, we can do this. I'm going to cut my comments in half. There's two points that I would ask you to consider as you debate this bill. The instability created by current operating levy process and the state's financial crisis, which is projected to extend for another 3 to 5 years. With the requirements to renew operating levy authority, which many of you know only started in the mid-1990s, districts are faced to deal with the public reaction associated with identifying the negative impact that would result from failed levies. I share firsthand the impact that resulted in White Bear Lake with our failed levy renewal in 2006. From 1999 through 2007, the number of students who choose to come to White Bear Lake and those who chose to leave White Bear Lake and go somewhere else were pretty much in balance. When our operating levy failed in 2006, the next school year, our students choosing to leave exceeded those coming in by over 200. That's $1 million in lost revenue per year. Even though we were successful in 2007, those children don't return. Once a parent and child decide to leave the school district, they don't come back. Finally, the reliance on local operating levies has become crucial. Currently, 303 of the 337 total districts in the state have a levy in place. Over the next 5 years, 124 districts, or 42% of those having existing authority, will have their authority expire. This is at the same time that, because of the state's significant financial crisis, they will most likely receive little or no increase in funding on the formula. By allowing school districts to extend existing levy authorities, you may create a situation whereby student program offerings and class sizes can remain tolerable. Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Swanson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Lori Swanson. I'm the chair of the White Bear Lake School Board. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm here today representing the hundreds and hundreds of parents and community members who have worked on the various operating and bond referenda in White Bear Lake over the years. Since my experience is 1999, 2000, 2002, 2003, 2006, 2007, and our renewal is up in 2011. The challenges that the current structure creates certainly go toward the communication effort of our many volunteers, and there are 55,000 registered voters within our school district, and communicating the investment in our schools is a very difficult proposition for our many volunteers. I also have experienced an exhaustion factor by many of our volunteers as well, saying to me over the years, I support it, Lori, but please don't call me again. I can't work on another campaign. I need to be with my family. It is just sheer exhaustion for them, and they're tired of defending the right for their children to have a good education. It really creates an uneven playing field as well, putting our children in the middle of a game that has many losers and not as many winners. House File 3063 supports your efforts as legislators. The state of Minnesota faces a severe budget crisis. This would provide a stability to school districts during very challenging times. This legislation reinforces our legislators' support of public education without raising taxes on the part of the state. It also does not increase the tax burden on families, as the proposed legislation authorizes school boards to reauthorize current levy authority for the same term. House File 3063 supports the legislature's expectation for public schools to provide a rigorous educational experience that meets and exceeds state standards. House File 3063 also holds local school boards accountable in that we are a government of the people. Local communities will elect those school board members who they feel represent their interests. We are also accountable to our community. We are conservative in our approach to spending wisely, recognized for our stellar accounting practices, and trusted by our communities. File 3063 would demand that we be accountable to our community by maintaining programs and services that provide opportunities for all of our students. In conclusion, we ask for your support of this proposed legislation to preserve the integrity of our public schools, to maintain the high quality of public education system that our state and our individual communities demand of us, and to allow public school districts to provide a stable learning environment that allows all students to reach their full potential. Thank you, and please let us know how we may support you as this proposed legislation is considered by the Minnesota State Legislature.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson. I know how hard you have worked on many levy referendums as well as advocating here for students. I'm going to ask if the business partnership and the chamber would be willing to testify at the end of the next bill for both, or if you want to testify on both. Is it the same testimony? Or if you're just going to do it for this one, but you're signed up for both and we don't have time for both, so you can do this one then. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And I guess we'd like to testify on both, but it is fairly similar. So maybe we'll do this at the front end in case we run out of time at the back end. While we're very sensitive to the budget situation facing our school districts, we have three specific concerns with House File 3063 and, frankly, House File 3699, the next bill. Our first concern, specifically with this bill, is it eliminates the ability of local voters to decide whether or not the levy should be extended. And what makes this even more of a concern is last year, the legislature repealed the right of citizens to call for a reverse referendum. So as a result, voters are largely shut out of this decision, both at the front end as well as potentially at the back end. Second, this is a permanent change in law, not just for the foreseeable fiscal crisis. And if we're reading it correctly, a levy that expires, if this were to pass, a levy that expires next year, extended 10 years, the board still has, this is a permanent referendum again with no voter input. And third, there's no language specifying that voters passed a referendum for oftentimes very specific purposes. There's nothing in this language that requires districts to continue to use the referendum money for the specific purposes that it was originally adopted. It just goes in for general purposes. So in one sense, a district may have said, we'd like this referendum so we can fund projects X, Y, and Z. After the board renews or extends the referendum that expired, those promises are off the board again. We'd ask that as you consider revenue-raising proposals, we'd also ask that you consider proposals that give school boards greater ability to manage their costs as well. This is the revenue side. As Representative Garofalo mentioned earlier, there's nothing in this bill that helps school districts manage the spending side of the equation. Some of the examples would include the options to go to binding arbitration, replicating a law previously used in Wisconsin that gave school boards the option of limiting contract settlements to the amount of revenue they received from the state, or even temporary tenure changes. Again, we understand the fiscal concerns behind this bill, but without giving school boards greater authority to also manage the spending side of this equation, this is just a temporary solution that won't meet fully our needs.
Thank you very much. Ms. Is it Rattel or Rattelli?
Rattel.
Rattelli, okay.
Thank you. Just Rattel.
Rattel, okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll keep my comments really concise and brief. They are different for both of them. So for this one, our concern is that it contradicts the long history of the educational finance policy that allows voters to approve supplemental funding requests for a specific amount of time. And we believe that this bill takes that power away from the voters, and that's our main concern. Specifically in line 1.11 and 1.12, it doesn't specify whether this is a one-time renewal or if the levy is able to be renewed multiple times, making it levy for eternity. And then lines 1.13 and 1.14, we don't believe alleviates the concerns about, because the public testimony doesn't sufficiently allow the voters to have their voices be heard. So in conclusion, we believe that the voters should continue to be able to vote on the reauthorization of referenda levies.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to, while I call on Representative Garofalo, switch places with Representative Newton so we can whip into the next bill. We're going to skip your closing statement, Representative Newton. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And I just had a quick question for Ms. Swanson and Mr. Wilcox, really briefly. And I can ask it while they're walking down just to... obviously, the state's in a difficult situation right now. Just being honest, we're not going to be able to provide new resources to the school districts for quite some time. And if I gave you the following three choices of having more discretion to raise revenue, choice two, more discretion to cut spending, or choice three, having both the discretion to raise revenue and cut expenditures, of those three options, which would you prefer?
Thank you. In all honesty, I would like to see a balance, and I do feel that the current system does create a defensive mode and not one that is entirely workable long time into the future. I don't think there's a silver bullet answer, and I would hate to choose just one. I really do feel that there is room in all aspects of all three of your choices for us. Room for improvement, by all respects. I cannot choose just one, but I do request the opportunity to provide a strong, stable educational environment for our students and not create a competitive environment among school districts.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson.
Thank you.
Representative Newton renews his motion to lay over H4-3063 for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. Chair Greiling, would you like to, being the charming person that you are, would you please introduce your House File 3699?
Mr. Chair, members, I move House File 3699.
Okay, Representative Greiling, would you tell us a little bit about that? And your testifiers come down, and
we can
call on Mr. Kroonquist, Ms. Vitale, and then Mr. Bartholomew and Mr. Lundell be ready here to come up to the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
This bill authorizes the school board to levy a discretionary levy not to exceed $200 per pupil whenever we legislators fail at our job of providing a financial increase. And I'll just say one last thing that Representative Newton just said. Even though the voters wouldn't get to comment on what the school board is doing, they do elect or unelect a local elected school board members.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Mr. Kroonquist,
thank you.
Identify yourself for the tape and give your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee Member Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and we're pleased to be here today in support of House File 3699, and thank Representative Greiling very much for bringing it forward. As has been noted, we all wish we were here talking about implementing the new Minnesota Miracle, but the reality is we need to build some bridges to get us to the new Minnesota Miracle over the next couple of years. This legislation, I think this is an important point. This is not about next year. The funding situation for next year, that die has been cast. Our school districts, according to a survey, are going to cut their budgets by over $154 million next year. This will do nothing to reverse that. Representative Dabney asked some questions about what the impact has been due to unallotment. Our districts have realized $5.2 million in expenses, either through reduced interest cost or borrowing costs that they've incurred. The delay that's taking place this spring in aid payments will cost them $450,000. So to reiterate the point that K-12 has not been protected, I think is a very valid one. We are sharing in the pain. Again, as you know, when we talk about levies, there's a two-year lag. So what you're talking about here is trying to help for the next biennium. You've all seen the February forecast. It doesn't look very pretty. We really are very uncertain whether or not the state is going to be able to provide funding for schools not only next year, but in the following years. This would at least provide a safety net. And quite frankly, the bill, as introduced, will not directly lead to any property tax increases at all. The option will only be there if the state fails to provide an increase in the formula. We hear a lot of talk about accountability. We certainly are doing a lot to hold our students, our teachers, our schools accountable. I think this would be legislation that will be holding the state accountable. If the state can't do its job and fulfill its constitutional obligation, then you'll be giving locally elected school boards the ability to raise some revenue, a modest amount of revenue at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Kroonquist. And Ms. Vitale and Mr. Bartholomew, did you want to give your testimony here at this point for about a minute each? And then Mr. Lundell, okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Again,
Ms.
I'll keep this very concise.
Introduce yourself for the tape, please. And
yep, Cecilia Vitale representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And we have many concerns about this bill, similar to the last ones, because they lack voter input. And we continue to support the voter approval of discretionary funding requests. The last sentence of the bill is our biggest concern, where it says must be spread against the net tax capacity of the school district in 1.10 and 1.11. There's two tax-based options for school levies, a net tax capacity and a referendum market value. Traditionally, the operating referendum levies are based on the referendum market value base, and the last sentence shifts that, and that's a major shift in a way that discretionary levies have not been applied. And this shift will shift the property tax burden onto the commercial and industrial properties. Our other concern is that it's not specific on whether this $200 in any year that the general education formula has not been increased. Our concern is if over 2 years it could be $400, and if it's like cumulative over, say, 5 years, it would be $1,000, whether that's clear or not. But even if these flaws were fixed, we'd still have concerns about this bill because it denies voters ability to vote on new property taxes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Till. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Jim Bartholomew, Minnesota Business Partnership. And I won't repeat my previous testimony. We just encourage you not to adopt this bill. Again, no voter approval, nothing to help school boards on the spending side of the equation. And again, if we're talking about flat funding without any cost control measures, the school boards are going to be in a bind even if you did pass this without voter approval. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Mr. Lundell, you want to introduce yourself for the tape, please, and then proceed with your minute testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell here today on behalf of Schools for Equity and Education. I guess I'll be the other end of the sandwich here. We've got the opponents sandwiched by the proponents. But I do want to say that Schools for Equity and Education does have some concerns about the legislation, even though, as has been pointed out by Mr. Kroonquist, we're in dire times. And Representative Greiling's been a strong supporter of the new Minnesota miracle, and we, too, would like to be talking about that more than this. I guess the concerns would be, given the effective date, the language and the effective date, is this a permanent solution? We would like to have discretionary levy authority in place, but it should probably be coterminous with the fiscal crisis that we're in. The second thing that I would say is that it would be great, I think, if we could talk about specific purposes. And the reason for that is that we've had a number of school districts and schools for equity and education that have just recently passed levies. They're going to be going out next year and saying their promise to their voters was, you know, your house taxes are going up $15 a month, $180 a year. All of a sudden, this would come on, and they would say our property taxes went up $30, not the $15 you said. What's going on here? And I think that giving school boards the opportunity to sell on specific purposes to the community, saying for things like special ed cross subsidy, transportation cross subsidy, compensatory cross subsidy. All things that can be documented where districts can go out for specific purposes and look for and add that up to the amount of money that it might be. As Representative Anzels, who's not here, talked about the need for equalization, and I think that, you know, that's kind of where we're at as an organization. This is an unequalized levy. It is unfortunate that it is so. There probably would not be universal access to it, and districts that are, you know, hard-pressed in property taxes now probably couldn't get to the amount. On the same time, the history of discretionary levies going back to the 1970s, that sooner or later everybody hits the maximum. And when everybody hits the maximum, you're going to have property tax disparities. And I think anything we can do in this effort, and there are some ways to probably do that, and I've talked to Mr. Strom about several of them, ways to equalize the property tax burden between districts is something that we would certainly investigate. But we really want to thank Representative Grande for coming forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. We have one member question. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's not a question, but it is a comment. And I just want to thank Representative Newton and Representative Greiling for bringing these two proposals forward. I know that neither of them are proponents of using property taxes for funding public education. And so this is a great conflict for them. I know that. But I want to thank them for bringing this bill forward because, members, hear me loud and clear. This is a reality check. We are going to have no money to finance our public schools for the next 5 years, I predict. And for the person, the testifier who came down and said that 5 to 6 years, I would like to know, have they, in that 5 to 6 years, have they factored in the $1.7 billion that we owe the schools? Or is it really more like 9 years? I'm sorry, nine. I didn't mean to say that. Maybe 7 or 8. This is truly the job of this committee. is to figure out how do we fulfill our constitutional mandate, along with school trust lines. how do we fund our public schools as the Constitution has clearly asked us to do? We don't want to raise taxes at the state level because we look like the bad people, and then we don't want to give the permission to the people who are willing to take the heat. I just find this a fascinating conversation, and I think it is this committee's job to find a solution. And if we are not willing to accept any of these solutions, then we have to say, okay, schools, you're on your own. School districts, I'm sorry, you're on your own for the next 7 years. Figure it out.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. And Representative Detmer, you have the last 30 seconds. Then Representative Greiling, you're going to close her down.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, on your 3699, on page lines 1.6 and 1.7, maybe the answer is in section 126C, but it says that in any year, the general education formula allowance under section 126C, subdivision 2, has not been increased. What if it is increased, and maybe it doesn't meet the increase that the school needs?
Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Detmer, this bill says that if they got an increase, even if it wasn't this much, they are not going to be able to do this.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Greiling. Representative Greiling, any final comments?
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Dietrich gave my closing comment.
Very good. House File 3699 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. Members, I'm looking for a motion to approve the minutes of Representative Dabney moves. Is there any discussion?
Nope.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. This committee is adjourned.